Hi, everybody. Welcome to our Saturday podcast. Really interesting guest today who you know, Jim Miller, best-selling author, will be coming up. But before we start, I want to talk about Peter Millar. It's a company founded 17 years ago in 2001 with a single cashmere sweater. And it's grown into something I love, a premium American lifestyle brand featuring a wide range of casual sportswear, tailored menswear, really luxury performance golf apparel. I get fit, I get style, I get quality. To me, Peter Millar is now the new standard in menswear. I've been wearing it all spring and summer. I went to Utah this summer. I was wearing the shorts and the golf shirts every day. They have performance shirts. You get the value, the style, and the quality. What I love about it is that it works for everything. I get up in the morning, go for coffee. Looks classy. Afternoon, go hit golf balls. Looks great. Want to go to dinner in the summer, but I don't want to wear heavy clothes. Looks fantastic. The performance shorts I'm wearing are the most comfortable I've ever worn. Right now, you can head over to petermillar.com/her to check out some of their favorites. Be sure to use my link and you'll get complimentary shipping. That's key. And a free hat. That's Peter Millar, MILLAR.com/her. petermillar.com/her. Founded 17 years ago with a single cashmere sweater. It's a premium American lifestyle brand. All sorts, wide range of casual sportswear. Well, he's my friend. He's a best-selling author. He's written several books, and I've read all of them front to back multiple times. Live from New York, his book about Saturday Night Live is a must-read. ESPN book, The Powerhouse CAA. He's also the host of a podcast now. Fascinating work, as always, deep diving on stuff. Origins with James Andrew Miller. You can get it on iTunes. And right now, his latest session is Origins, is called Origins of a Champion, about Nick Saban. Now, when I think of you, I think of these big, broad, I mean, you're a tennis player. You write these in-depth books. And I think, oh, God, Nick Saban, he's not going to let you in on anything. He's going to be terribly difficult. So your perceptions and the reality of dealing with Sabans, how did you kind of reconcile all that stuff? How did it work for you?
Well, for me, I mean, going down to Tuscaloosa to sit down with Nick Saban and be, you know, at Alabama is kind of like dealing with some of these broader topics that I do books on and other reporting on, because Alabama football and Nick Saban are both such huge brands, right? I mean, it's almost like beyond the confines of college football. And so it was very interesting for me to just to kind of understand and to try and dig into, you know, why this keeps happening. Why has this guy been so successful down there? And even went into a little bit of, you know, why there wasn't that kind of success in the NFL for him.
You know, let's talk about that. You know, I've always seen Nick as kind of a linear thinker, compartmentalizes stuff. He talks about the process. It can be redundant and repetitive and reductive, but that's, I think, that in football that works. The NFL's got a little more star power where the player is a bigger star. In college, the coach is the star. When you look at his NFL failures, and I use that loosely because he was turning things around, but he didn't get the doctors to give him Drew Brees, or I think he'd still be in the NFL and the Bama dynasty is never created. What didn't work in the NFL, in your opinion, that does work fabulously in college?
Well, I think, first of all, you're smart for contextual purposes to point out the Drew Brees thing, because, look, there have been a lot of smart coaches, and if you don't have in the NFL, if you don't have a quarterback, then you're climbing Everest on a cold day in your shorts. So
right.
I think if he had had Drew Brees, then I think it's worth thinking that things might have been different. But I think to the larger point in your question, it is, look, there's a very different dynamic, and I talked to a lot of former players there. When you're 18 and 19 years old and you haven't, you know, you're just you're out of your house for the first time, and you're in this new system. The coaches have, particularly somebody with a reputation like Saban, there's much more control over these players than NFL players have. And as a result, I think that you can have a level of discipline and that fear of punishment and a lot more, for lack of a better phrase, law and order in your program than you can in the NFL. And I think that's why, look, I start the podcast off by talking about the fact that after last year's championship, you know, there were NFL teams that were interested in him coming over. And I think, to his credit, that's why he decided, you know what, I'm going to stay here. I like this. I like this dynamic. I like the control I have. And I don't need to be going to the NFL now at this stage of my career. It's just, you know, particularly when you talk about the process, because the process is, it's not only redundant, but it's redundant by design. That's the whole thing. It's like, you know, you're like literally practicing not until you can't get it, until you get it right. It's until you can't get it wrong.
That's very, you know, it's to some degree, it's factory work. You know what I mean? It's just no mistakes. You interviewed Lane Kiffin, Joe Girardi, his wife. Let's start with Kiffin. Kiffin has some star power. In fact, I would say of all Nick's assistants, Lane has the most star power. What does Lane say about that time in Tuscaloosa?
Oh my God, Lane is the gift that keeps giving, because it's like he's like an iceberg, because you see just a little bit of him, but then all this stuff is going on underneath the surface. And one of the things that I was, you know, I think able to do with him, what made it so interesting for me, was there's like a little, it's not passive aggressive, but he's like, well, now I'm not going to say that they would have. And then you just kind of go deeper and deeper with him. And then eventually, yeah, they would have won. Yeah. If I was the offensive coordinator, if I hadn't been taken out of the game, yeah, they would have won that game. And it's like, whoa, okay. And it's like, yeah, Pete Carroll is fun to work for. I don't use the word fun for Alabama. I mean, he's got a lot going on in his mind. And as much as he tries to kind of, you know, stay between the emotional 40-yard lines, there's just so much going on that when it seeps out, it's beyond fascinating.
No, and I think it's important to remember, Jim Miller joining me, best-selling author, Origins, The Origin of a Champion, about Nick Saban, that Nick did Lane a great service hiring him. Lane's reputation was garbage. He had the USC disaster. He'd been seen as very difficult to work with. Saban really saved his career, but I do find it's fascinating that Kiffin loves to tweak Nick, even on Twitter. And I think there's a rock star quality to Lane that Nick secretly kind of respects, but is annoyed by, if that makes sense. Lane kind of...
I think it makes sense, and yeah. I think they fed into each other, because Kiffin told me something which I started laughing about, because, you know, obviously he had that experience in Tennessee, which was, you know, a tad askew, as Jerry Seinfeld would say. And and he found, when Lane heard that everybody in the SEC had gotten wind of the possibility that Nick would even be thinking about hiring Kiffin, Kiffin said, oh, I got the job now. Because he knew that Saban wanted to be his own guy, and he wanted to make sure that he wasn't going to listen to anyone saying you can't, who he can hire and who he can't hire. So the more the protests were like, no, we don't want Lane Kiffin in the SEC, and don't even think about it, like Lane Kiffin got, sure enough, I got the job. Nobody's going to tell Nick Saban who he can hire.
Yeah, in the 3-episode series about Saban, Jim Miller interviews Joe Girardi, Lane Kiffin, and Nick's wife, Terry. Now let's move into that. Nick doesn't give us a lot of Nick. He talks about the process. He talks about things that football fans would be fascinated with. My hunch is that Terry's got much more power in the relationship than maybe the casual football fan would think. In fact, I think they call her in the South Miss Terry. What was he willing to, you know, you first of all, the fact that you sat down with Terry is great. That makes me want to listen to this episode. Can you give me, don't give me too much. I want people to go in and listen to this. But what was a fascinating dynamic here with Terry and Nick to you?
Well, I mean, look, they've been married for over 45 years. They knew each other in, like, junior high school. So I definitely wanted to, I mean, I take the word origins kind of too seriously sometimes, but let's face it, I started this podcast with West Virginia and Nick's dad, Big Nick, and talked to Nick about it and talked to Terry about it. But there's a sequence at the end of episode one, which, you know, I've heard from a lot of Alabama fans in the last 24 hours. She's pretty extraordinary. And when she was going through this with me, I must say it was pretty impressive. It really was almost startling. And I think that, you know, what you begin to realize is that It's almost like he controls everything and then she controls him. Not that she controls him, so to speak, but I don't think, who else does he look up to? Do you know what I mean? So many people, like Joe Girardi is there. Oh my gosh, I invited Nick to come and speak to the Yankees and he's been a mentor and he's been, I mean, it's like, you know, you almost feel like the Pope and Lassie love Nick Saban, or at least look up to him.
Yeah.
And yet, so who does he look up to? And I thought it was really interesting to kind of delve into that with Terry. The other thing that I kind of toyed around with Saban was, I said to him, would you like to work for yourself? And he said, I never really thought about that. And I said, well, think about the way you are as a boss. Now think about, would you like to work for you? And he gave like a pretty thoughtful answer. It was, and I could tell that he was really trying to be honest with it. And I thought that was fascinating, that he would at least, you know, try and go there on something like that. But the two of them were are rather formidable.
Get back to Jim in a second. Upstart has revolutionized how we borrow money by going beyond the traditional FICO score to offer personal loans, taking into account factors like your job experience, education, when determining your interest rates. Debt, some have a lot, some have a little. The vast majority of us have some. But the path to financial freedom can look awfully bleak when you have high interest debt. And if your FICO score isn't great, it can make breaking out of the revolving debt cycle harder than it needs to be. Thankfully, we have a sponsor here, Upstart. It's revolutionizing the process of personal lending. They offer personal loans, but they're not like the ones your bank or credit union provide. Upstart goes beyond the traditional FICO score when assessing your credit worthiness. In fact, they may actually reward you based on your education, your job history, in the form of a smarter interest rate. Over 100,000 people have used Upstart to pay off credit cards. Boy, pay those things down. Or pay them off. Fund their wedding. Simply make a large purchase. Now it is your turn. Okay, hurry. Go to upstart.com/herd to find out how low your Upstart rate is. Checking your rate only takes 2 minutes and will not affect your credit. That's upstart.com/herd. Loans are made by Cross River Bank, an FDIC-insured New Jersey state-chartered commercial bank. Jim Miller joining me, best-selling author, host of the podcast Origins with James Andrew Miller. It is available on iTunes. I'm a listener. Past series, by the way, have been Curb Your Enthusiasm, College Game Day. Is Nick aware? I mean, he's a 60-year-old guy, mid-60s. He's still got incredible passion. Sometimes he blows up on television. And unlike most jobs, his job is public. It's public consumption. Is he aware sometimes when he loses it that it perhaps is damaging to his brand? I mean, how does he, again, I'll use the word reconcile, with his success and sometimes his passion, like overflows, that he's going crazy and throwing a headset? You ever think that sometimes he thinks, God, I wish I wouldn't have done that?
No, in fact, I might even go so far as to say that he may have already planned that out in his head. I think that there are times when, look, I talked about it with Kiffin, because there were times that he took Kiffin to the, you know, to the woodshed, and like literally on camera, he knew the cameras were on them, and he just chewed them out right on the sidelines in front of the team, in front of the fans, and in front of a national television audience. And I believe that that Nick Saban is so disciplined, or you could use Machiavellian, or you could use just so into the process for himself, that was part of an overall design at that game, for that game. And it may have been to literally incentivize the team or to warn the team that he's in that kind of mood. It may have been because he really did need to shut Kiffin down, and he may have decided that morning in the shower, if Kiffin gets crazy on me again today, I am going to literally chew his head off in front of everyone. So I don't have to deal with him for the rest of the game like that. I mean, I don't think he's afraid. Let's put it this way. I don't think he's afraid to go to those kinds of places and worry about what it's going to do to his image or brand. In fact, with a lot of people, it only enhances it.
Yeah, that's interesting. You know, happy. Happy can be a little, you know, it's a term. Is somebody happy? I think Nick is certainly satisfied with his place. He's the greatest coach in the history of college football. I mean, if you think of how long USC's dynasty was, it was half as long as Alabama's current dynasty, and Alabama's probably got a much longer tail, another 5 years. If I said happiness, content, do you think that, how do those words line up with Saban to you?
Well, I think it's like, it's almost like it's a different, his planet doesn't, like his universe doesn't operate around the sun. It's like when you go to work, I've seen you at work, your culture there, you're hanging out with everybody, you're calm with everybody. Of course, everybody's working hard, but you can let yourself relax. You can joke around with everybody. Your set is a very comfortable set. You walk into the building, and I talk about this in the podcast. You walk into that athletic building in Tuscaloosa, and it's intense. It's palpable. And like from secretaries to maintenance people, like there's not a lot of margin of error. There's high expectations on everyone. And the weird thing is about this particular ecosystem is, like, we've always been trained that when people are really uptight and when they feel like, you know, they're on a high wire act and there's no net, they're not going to do their best. And somehow, this is the exception. This is, like, why Nick Saban in Alabama sometimes can be an outlier, because it is that tense, and yet he's able to get the best of people from that position. And so that means that you have to have a certain type of player, you have to have a certain type of employee who is willing to operate like that. And, you know, that's part of the whole training and the process, because it's like an indoctrination. You're going to breathe different air. So I'm sorry, but that's a long way of answering your question, which is, I don't think fun, happiness, calm or whatever, those are not things that, as part of the football experience, coaching, or even in the off season, that Nick Saban necessarily wants, needs, delivers, or embraces. It's just not. He's just wired a different way. And so if you buy into that system, then you're probably going to do really well. And for those people who can't buy into that system, go someplace else, because you are not going to be able to survive.
It's a 3-episode season of Origins with Nick Saban, and he talks to Joe Girardi and Lane Kiffin and Nick's wife, Miss Terry, I think they call her in Tuscaloosa. I'm so glad you tackled this. This is, I always think of you as, you know, you do these massive, almost international level things, CAA and live from New York, and, college football, it feels so Southern to me. So I love the fact that you went deep diving down there. Jim, it's a pleasure. By the way, I don't know where you're at now. We need to have coffee again. We have a lot to discuss.
Yeah.
The world is changing. Every day. Netflix is taking over the world. I may be on the street soon. I don't know what the future of television is. It feels like it's more fluid now than ever, doesn't it?
I think that sometimes in our lifetime, you look, 5 years ago, boy, a lot was going on then. We didn't realize it. Now, in current day, we realize it every day that so much is going on. It's right before us.
Yeah, video on demand. I was telling my wife the other day, I only go to movies now if my son wants to go. So I've seen Ant-Man. I've seen anything with, anything with Robert Downey. It's an interesting world where I was a theater kid. You know, I love going to the movies, and now I sit home with my wife and I binge watch television, and the audience, the consumer now controls it on their terms. And I don't know if I love it. I don't know if I'm petrified of it, but we live in a different world, and the smart are going to survive and the nimble are going to survive. Has covering it changed for you? Covering the media, do you sense a palpable fear and anxiety within the industry?
I think that there's a lot of shaking out that's happening, obviously, when you look at Disney and Fox and other things. But I think that we're finally at a point now where people are saying, okay, we built all these incredible pipes, and we got our speeds down, and we got delivery systems down, and distribution to your Apple Watch and all that. And now we've kind of like made this big circle, and we're back to, okay, but what is the content?
Yes.
And you know what? In some ways, whenever I get carsick over the state of the industry or how crazy some things are, in some ways that's a saving grace, because it really is going to come back to people like yourselves and how you do interviews and how you tell stories and the way that you want to present your own brand. and whether or not people are going to want to spend time with you, because there's hundreds, if not thousands, of choices. And so I think now, more than ever, you know, that old hackneyed expression that we had like 10 years ago, content is king. Now content is like the only thing, because everything else is kind of like beside the point. We can get it anywhere. So I think that, you know, the idea of how people are going to differentiate themselves and what kind of stories they're going to tell and how long they're going to tell those stories, that to me is like, that's the real interesting thing for the next couple of years.
You know, it's interesting, Jim. There's two models. There is the Rush Limbaugh model. I'm going to create Bill Maher model. I'm just going to do content. Then there's the Oprah Glenn Beck model, is I'm going to own stuff. I'm going to be the CEO and do content. And I have come to terms that I create content, and I don't have the personality to be a boss to multiple people and do that day to day hiring. You know, it's funny, but when I started this career, you didn't have the option. You were a content provider. Now there are people, dynamic performers, that can do both. They can do content, or they can go Glenn Beck, they can go Oprah, they can go Howard Stern. And I think your point is, like, if you're a quarterback that throws from the pocket, don't try to be Russell Wilson. Like, doing two things in this industry, sometimes, Jim, I guess my point is, choices create anxiety. And I think anxiety dilutes the creative content. So I have pulled back more into just doing content, but I think now broadcasters are offered both content and running a business, and I think it's problematic. I think I go back to certain people, and the reason I go to Bill Maher, or the reason I will go to, you know, regardless of the person, I like the quality of their product. And I think sometimes, and I'm just long-winded here, once you move past the Oprah, Glenn Beck, you go into that stage, I fear that it dilutes my content. That makes sense, right?
I guess. I'm going to just say, in your case, it may not wind up being so binary, Colin, because 3 years from now, you can find somebody to run something for you, but you may all of a sudden find a 24 or 25-year-old who's, you think, is incredibly talented and who has a wonderful future ahead, and they're going to come to you and say, I want you to mentor me, and I want you to executive produce my show. It's not going to take a lot of your time, but I need your input. And so it may not just be you, you know, that's part of this, you know, your ecosystem. It may be that you're going to find time, especially as you be more critically, let's say, protective of your time, that you may have time to start mentoring and start kind of shepherding some other things that are important to you that you can't do just by yourself. And then you just hire somebody to run that company. I mean, Oprah likes to run her company, and Glenn Beck likes to run his company, but that doesn't mean that you'd have to do that. You get somebody that you really trust and you have faith in, and then you just tell them, you take care of that stuff. I want to take care of the content, and the content may wind up including other things other than your own shows.
Are you available for hire currently? Jim Miller. Jim, it's a pleasure. Let's get coffee soon.
Thank you so much for having me.
Okay, best-selling author, folks. It's on iTunes. Origins, it's called The Origins of a Champion. And the first episode's House of Saban, out on iTunes. Good stuff. Thanks, Jim.
Thanks so much.